All right, welcome once again to another WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. This is Craig Lindell, and this is kind of the weekly rundown of the Browns matchup this week with the Chargers, and I've got Rick with me.
Hello.
So, we're going to be breaking down that, but first, let's talk a little bit about the Browns news and kind of what's been going on Waiting for Next Year in terms of Browns news. I wrote an article yesterday about Pat Shurmur, and regardless of how you feel about the guy, I've determined, at least in my mind, that the Browns should continue to go with him for the rest of this year regardless, even though there are a lot of potential interim coaches. I think there are a lot of guys whose names scream interim coach, actually. Probably not permanent coach, but interim coach on the staff. Ray Rhodes, Brad Childress, Dick Geron, guys like that. But it just seems to me that you'd be better off kind of guiding Pat Shurmur, giving him some things that you want to see and keeping them there because the team's not off the rails yet. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, it's not like you're going to replace Shurmur mid-season with the guy who's going to coach the team next year. You know, I think that we're all pretty much in agreement that even one of these interim guys probably wouldn't be the coach next year.
Not going to cut it for Joe Banner.
So what's the point? I mean, what would be the point in letting cutting the guy loose this year? Just for continuity's sake, just keep him. Keep everybody around. Keep the players, you know, somewhat happy as far as, not having the extreme upheaval. Let Brandon Whedon develop. Let him learn all he can from Shurmur this year. You know, and then,
He's going to get reps throwing the ball.
Yeah, that's for certain. So it wouldn't make sense for me, for them to replace him in season. And to be honest with you, even to give somebody else the interim coach title, I don't think any of us really, if they bring in a new head coach next year, do we really expect that they're going to keep all the same coordinators? No. I mean, some of these guys, you know, Geron and Childress, these, you know, they all had connections together, right?
Right.
With Holmgren and with Shurmur. So if Shurmur's gone, you know, are they even going to stick around? Are these going to be our coordinators next year? I mean, we may be talking next year about a brand new head coach and two new coordinators, offensive and defense.
Well, and that's a good point. And that's something I didn't touch on in the article, but the most motivated person to perform well at a high level right now is Pat Shurmur. If he's gone, then everybody else is going to feel as good as gone too.
Sure.
And you're right. They're not going to have any kind of momentum, any kind of drive. You wouldn't think.
I wouldn't. I would expect a team like that. I mean, let's say that they went through and fired him at the bye week, which a lot of people are screaming for. Let's say this game's a disaster and they fired Shurmur at the bye week. You know, what are we looking at? 7-8 games of just abysmal. Well, what are we really playing for?
You know, right? And all because some people, including myself, some people have been unhappy with a 4th-and-1 call or a couple of 2-point conversions or, you know, God forbid he kicks a field goal when he should have gone for a touchdown. Those are infuriating as fans. I'll be the first one to admit it. It drives me batty to watch it. But the larger context here is that this team is still playing hard every week. It seems like they're getting better, even regardless of their coaching decisions that could be costing them some games. The culture from our outsider perspective does not appear to be off the rails. It seems like the team is still trying. The leaders in the clubhouse, guys like DeQuell Jackson, and seem to still be leaders. They don't seem to have given up on the guy. All those things considered, I don't see the benefit in switching midseason.
Yes, again, particularly with all the rookies that we have. Let's let them finish this year out. Let's let them learn what they can, get their first season under their belt. Next year coming in, fresh start.
And if you're crazy about the fact that they're passing 3-1, you go to Pat Shurmur and you say, look, I need you to work more in the run game. We've got to get that balanced out better. You've got to mix that into your play calling. That's something that they could do with the guy who's there.
Sure.
And maybe that leads him to see the writing on the wall, but maybe he also will think that, you know, that's a way to save his job.
Yeah, absolutely. If my boss is telling me I need to do something different, well, then I better do it different or else I'm going to, you know, end up on the street.
Yeah. So with that in mind, how many rushing attempts do you think we see against the San Diego Superchargers?
I guess that depends on how fast they fall behind, right? I mean, you know.
It doesn't seem to have mattered in any of the previous games. Even when they're in striking distance, they seem to like to throw the ball 41 times to 17.
Well, but there's a big difference between being in striking distance and having a lead, right? I mean, if the Browns had a 10-point lead in the second half, don't you think we'd start seeing a whole lot of run plays? I think we would.
I think you'd just see those swing passes again.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, I think with the running game, a lot is going to depend on how healthy Trent Richardson feels on Sunday. And when he hits the line the first time and somebody bangs into a rib, you know, is he going to wince? Is he, you know, is he going to be able to fight through it or not? If he is and if he's effective, then, you know, who knows? We could see him with 18 to 20 carries. If not, he's going to be at 10, 12.
So tell me, are you actually concerned about Trent Richardson? Because that's been another one of the topics. It's been on local radio and it's been all over the internet where people are actually kind of concerned that maybe he's a bust or maybe he's got the wrong running style. That was a big one on Kylie and Booms. They were talking about, well, he's got the wrong running style and it's going to lead to injury forever and ever and ever, and he's got to change it.
Yeah, you know, obviously, I did the film room this week on his runs from last Sunday, and to say that he has to say that his running style is different from the beginning of the season is not really true. His running style on Sunday, again, it was you talk about limited sample size. He only had 8 runs, okay,
right.
But of those 8 runs, he was just bottled up at the line of scrimmage on 6 or 7 of them. There just was nowhere for him to go. He is a guy that he's going to make a cut. Most times he's going to make a cut before he gets to the line of scrimmage. Now, you can back me up on this, where typically running backs get in trouble is when they try and make more than one cut in the backfield. You know, they call it dancing around in the backfield or whatever. I don't think that Richardson does that. I think
I certainly think he does on occasion, but usually when the play is so negative that it's so negative anyway, and he's probably got to learn to just go down.
Sure,
and try, give up on
bury his head and try and get back to the line of scrimmage instead of taking a loss.
But again, right there, that gives me concern about the offensive line and not Trent Richardson.
Sure, and that's a fair point. I'm not really, to go back to your original question, I'm not really concerned about Trent Richardson as far as running style or whatever. What I'm concerned about is his health. Okay, obviously, you know, he had the problem with the knee. Now he's got the problem with the ribs. Will the ribs thing heal? Yeah, you know, he's not always going to have problems with his ribs. He's had injuries in college. He's had injuries now in his first year in the pros. So that's obviously a concern. Running back is a position where you get beaten on. But I'm not concerned that he's all of a sudden going to be this bust. We've seen too much potential from him. You know, in those couple games, especially that Cincinnati game early on, where he was feeling better, he was feeling healthy, and he was very effective.
And even on the less than spectacular runs, he was the guy who was kind of leaking through for an extra 2 yards, or not going down on first tackle, or being surrounded by 4 guys and the ref finally having to blow the whistle because of forward progress, but they couldn't actually bring him down. And I think that's been missing the last couple of weeks with the rib injury, but that's not a long-term concern. That's an injury thing, and maybe an injury thing leads to maybe he's constantly banged up like that. But to have that concern today seems premature.
It seems absolutely premature to me. Like I said, I'm not concerned about him long-term as far as running style. And again, even if he is not a Peyton Hillis run between the guard and the center type of running back, then use him for what he is.
Right.
You know, let's get him the ball a little bit more in space. I mean, again, we're used to in Cleveland, we've seen our share of these kinds of running backs.
Well, and we played the Colts last week. The Browns played the Colts last week, and I've been watching the Colts way too much since I've been married to my wife because she's been a Colts fan. But you start to gain an appreciation for, you know, Peyton Manning audibling into that stretch play, and that stretch play kind of. It kind of looks like a drop back to the defense for a second, and then you're automatically putting your running back in a little bit more space. Kind of,
sure.
You know, he could cut back inside the tackles if there's space there, but he could also go outside the tackles, and it's almost like giving the running back the option on the first read. But we don't see that kind of stretch play. They telegraph the run. They run inside the tackles. They want to bang Owen Marisic down there inside. if Alex Smith is healthy, he's usually motioning into the backfield halfway. How many times do we see the Alex Smith motion play last year? And if he hadn't been hurt this year, how many times would we be seeing it this year? But those are not the kind of running plays that I love to see, especially when you've got a threatening quarterback arm.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about that play, the Alex Smith motion play, and they ran that this week a couple times, but with Cameron as the tight end. And Cameron is not a blocking tight end.
He's not.
He's not. And suddenly he's lined up in front of Richardson, and the ball's getting ready to snap. I'm like, are you kidding? This is the running play we're about to run, and we're going to use Cameron to lead block? Just not good.
Well, and how crazy is it that, you know, Alex Smith comes back and then – here, come to find he misses another game. Talk about a weird injury.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, and we're never going to know about these injuries. I mean, it's just the nature of, whether it's the nature of Shermer, whether it's the nature of the Browns, whatever.
It doesn't infuriate me either, by the way. I know it infuriates some fans that, well, we have a right to know. I can't believe they wouldn't talk about the injuries. And I think that especially with this Trent Richardson injury, I almost said industry. Maybe Trent Richardson will be in industry by the time it's over. But injury, maybe there is something to be gained from kind of making people game plan for him, even if he's not 100%. Because, although, I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to be gained. He hasn't shown that much, I guess.
To me, I think really the only difference is how much do they practice. You know, if a guy's injured and he's not practicing, then, I don't know, I guess that says more about more about whether or not he's prone to start and than what they're telling us.
Yeah, but I guess the bottom line is that, you know, I'd kind of like to know who's playing, but when you've got marginal cases like Ataba Rubin was last week or Trent Richardson was last week where they could go, but we don't know how effective they're going to be or for how long they can go, I'm okay with that.
It is,
what are you going to do?
It is some kind of competitive advantage, and so that's fine.
But you don't take it personally like some fans seem to. Like, it's a flaw in the organization.
No, I guess for me, it's more, let's just be honest about it as far as, you know, when you're given a press conference or something and you're asked about injury, just say, you know what, I'm just really not going to talk about that injury. He's listed as probable.
Yeah, he's likely to practice today, and that's really all I'm going to say because we want to keep everybody
right, exactly.
Guessing.
Don't tell me, oh, he's doing great. He's ahead of schedule. Although, how many times have we heard that? He's ahead of his rehab schedule. If you hear that phrase, he's ahead of schedule, what does that tell you? Oh, well, then he's likely to play at least on the date when they said he was going to come back, as opposed to, oh, he's way ahead of schedule. But all of a sudden...
Well, and in all fairness, they told us the truth about that with Trent Richardson's knee. They told us the truth about that with Phil Taylor's injury, because we're used to that Phil Taylor surgery, you know, with DeQuell Jackson taking him out for an entire year.
Well, but did they? Okay, so they told us that Trent Richardson was ahead of schedule
with
the knee. But all along, we were told he was going to start on opening day.
Right. So they told the truth. That's all I'm saying.
They said the first time with that report, oh, he's on target for opening day. After that, when he started, working out at the facility or whatever, oh, he's ahead of schedule. Well, if he's ahead of schedule, then wouldn't that mean he's going to play before the opening game?
No, I think you're nitpicking.
Okay. But... Well, what about with Phil Taylor? He's going to go on the PUP list. He's eligible to come back on this date.
But that's more information than we might have gotten from other people.
Maybe. I don't know.
And the fact that he's back this season at all is truthful. I mean, we're used to this injury taking a guy out for an entire year. I mean, our only experience with this injury is it taking a guy out for the whole year. So the fact that he's actually back and they said he'd probably be back, I mean, was truthful.
Okay, but when did the injury occur? You say that you were used to this injury being, you know, taking a guy out for the entire season. Well, Taylor's injury occurred in the calendar year earlier than DeQuell's did. So, you know, I don't
know.
That's true. I mean... I guess it's like you say, we're just being nitpicky one way or the other. And I certainly don't lose sleep over injury reports. So.
No. All right. So the Chargers, obviously, you and I were dead on with the Colts.
Thank you. Weren't we dead on? I mean, dead on.
Not
last
in terms
week.
Of like picking a score or anything else, but we said, you know, these are the kinds of games the Browns quote unquote can win. But, you know,
inconsistent team.
To expect them to win on any given week is just ambitious.
Absolutely. Go back and listen to last week's preview again if you have the time.
So San Diego's the same way. You know, San Diego is a team that, you know, Philip Rivers is prone to bad interceptions when they get pressure in his face. And they do have a very good running back. They've got some weapons. Certainly, the Browns have been susceptible to tight ends before, so Antonio Gates is always a concern.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But at the same time, they're not a juggernaut. They're not the New York Giants.
Well,
and you got to think the Browns have a chance.
And ironically, I mean, they're not as good this year with the pass as they have been in years past with Philip Rivers.
Well, then they don't have Vincent Jackson.
Right.
He's now in Tampa.
Sure, they're 19th. In total passing yards in the league, they're actually rushing yards 18th. So they're technically better theoretically against the or with the run than they are the pass, which is a little bit of a change up from what the Chargers have been the last couple of years. But defensively, they're statistically much better against the run than most teams. I think they're second.
Well, and they're coming off a bye week.
Coming off a bye.
After getting their heart stomped by Peyton Manning.
Right. And they've actually technically lost two in a row. So,
who did they lose to before?
They lost Denver. They lost to the Saints. So they're 3-3. They've beaten the Raiders on opening week. They beat the Titans and they beat the Chiefs. By 17.
And so, I mean, I would say that's a strength of schedule of
a meh, maybe, yeah. They've lost to, they lost significantly to the Falcons. That was a 27-3 game. They lost to the Saints and they lost to the Broncos a couple weeks ago.
And they lost to the Broncos in spectacular, chokerific fashion.
Yes, so.
Chokerific. That's why we have a podcast, because I don't feel like spell check.
Messing
with me on that.
So how does that affect a team like the Chargers? You have that kind of game against the Broncos, a division game and a game which they should have won.
Well, and I can't remember who the commenter was on Waiting for Next Year, but they said, you know, this could go one of two ways, especially with Norv Turner. Either they're going to come out and stomp the Browns coming off a bye week, or they're going to get crushed again, you know. And so that's obviously ridiculously funny But that's the Browns. That's the Browns. That's the Chargers. That's the Browns. There's no way to predict this game because you have no idea who's going to show up. The Chargers could come out and beat the Browns by 4 touchdowns. It's possible. It's not likely, but it's possible. The Browns could also, if that defense shows up and gives Philip Rivers fits and he turns into a mental midget like he can on occasion.
Okay, well,
the Browns might be two touchdowns going away.
The devil's advocate, that's going to mean that the Browns manage to get pressure
on
Rivers, which has not been a strength of the team this year. We've not been getting consistent pressure. So, you know, if the Browns are going to shut down that passing game, again, that front seven is going to have to do something to get some pressure in Philip Rivers' face and get the ball out of his hands quicker and, you know, shorter routes.
He makes bad decisions when he's got pressure in his face.
Yeah, he's got 10 touchdowns this year, 9 interceptions. Not a stellar season by any stretch of the imagination. You're right, though, with Gates. And I got to be honest with you, not entirely sure how his season's been going or you know, his health or whatever. But if he's healthy and he's playing up to his abilities, our linebackers are going to have some difficulty covering him as we have in the past. So
absolutely. So there you have it. Our prediction is no prediction. It could go absolutely any way. It's just too unpredictable with the Chargers coming off their bye week. They've got some talented players, but if they're demoralized, if they're not practicing well, if they're defensive about, you know, the fans, and certainly that PR piece that came out from one of their PR guys basically saying get a life to the fans who are critical and saying, hey, look, the season's not remotely over. Who knows how much that leaked into the culture?
Well, here's a question for you. You know, was the schedule then kind to the Chargers that they had not only just the bye week after that game, but on top of that, they're on the road? I mean, they're way, way, way far away from home. Yeah. I would think that that would be an advantage to them.
It could be, but they have to take advantage of it. And they, sure. A good team with good locker room leaders will take advantage of it. I can't speak to Phillip Rivers as a leader. An outsider perspective who's watched him since he's been a rookie, just marginally. I don't watch Phillip Rivers a lot, but my perception is that he's not a great leader. You know, he's more of like a Flacco, where he's on a team, but he's just a guy. I mean, they're good quarterbacks, but neither one of them are the leader of men. They're not the Tom Brady or the Peyton Manning level of leader. I don't know. Do you get that perception?
I think that's a fair perception. And I think maybe Flacco might be the ideal kind of comparison in that, because while you may be impressed with Rivers' skills and his ability
at times.
Yeah. At times, he's always also been surrounded by those pieces.
LaDainian Tomlinson.
The Tomlinson and the Gates and,
Vincent Jackson.
He's had some weapons to go to as well. So, and I think that probably a lot of people,
and maybe, let's be honest, some pretty good coaching. I mean, as much as people like to dog Marty Schottenheimer for not getting over the top in the playoffs, or they like to do the same thing for North Turner, I mean, these aren't newbie, awful, horrendous football minds. These are guys who've been around, who know a few things, and yeah, they might not be good enough to get you over the top, but I don't think anybody would call them bad coaches. It's not like Art Shell. Or,
right, yeah.
Fill in the blank. I'm
any number of Browns assistants. Ray Rhodes, yeah. Brad Childress.
Yeah. Or anybody who's coached the Detroit Lions.
In the last 10 years.
Excluding Schwartz, I guess, who's doing okay. But so, all right. I guess that's our prediction. If you had to nail down a score, I hate doing this. But if you had to guess a score.
But you're in charge of it, so we don't have to.
Well, you're right. We don't have to. But if you had to guess based on what we saw, do you think the Browns offense is going to be able to put up some points?
I do. I think that this offense I don't care who they're playing. This offense should be good for at least two touchdowns.
Minimum two touchdowns.
Don't you think?
I like that. I agree
with touchdowns and a field goal. I think that's what this offense is capable of. If the defense can get you in a position, or the special teams can get you in a position to give you a little more than good.
Yeah, if everybody's clicking, the defense, special teams, and the offense, this team should be able to put up 40, 45 points. But just the offense on their own with long fields, or minimal field position advantages should be able. I like your theory. Two touchdowns and a field goal.
Now, but now here's the other question, though. San Diego offense. What do you think they're good for?
Yeah, I think they're good for more. So
sure, I'd say they're a 24 spot.
So I think we've just walked into a 24-17 prediction. And if everything goes, if the Browns do well, they'll do better than that. But
and have a chance to win in the end.
But the baseline for this game is Chargers 24, Browns 17. And the Browns will have to overcome that by playing,
by playing good special teams, outstanding defense, getting a couple turnovers, or the thing that can always be a factor, especially with a team from the West Coast, is the weather.
Right.
So there you go. Maybe the weather influences the Chargers down to a 21 or 17 score.
But don't be confused. The Browns should be an underdog in this game, and they are.
And they are.
Do you know what the spread is?
I think it's 2.5.
Oh, man. That's not enough. The Browns should be a bigger underdog than that. As much as I hate to say that, I don't relish that fact that they should be.
And I think that they're looking at San Diego's last game and carrying that forward. So,
all right. Well, there you have it. That's been this has been your pregame.
Get them all pumped up, huh?
Dun, 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 dun. So that's it. For Rick, this is Craig Lindell. This has been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast.
Waiting for next year.